Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is an official chat and shit disclaimer.
Yeah.
You might be listening to this thinking, oh my days, some of this sounds really dated because we're not in lockdown as much anymore.
It is.
Well, that's fine.
It's vintage.
Exactly. Some of it was recorded a little while back. Get over it.
So just play it. And if you don't like or you think, oh, that's wrong, skip it 15 seconds.
Just skip it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Right, press play now.
You are now in tune to the Chat and Shit podcast. Guess what? Guess what? This is a podcast. And it's called Chatting Shit, boy. Welcome.
So what are we doing here today, Hugo?
We're doing another classic episode of our podcast.
Yeah. And what's the podcast called?
It's called Chatting Shit Podcast.
Yeah. And why is that?
Because we don't know what the fuck we're doing.
Well, we no, but that's intentional though, isn't it? That's, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like if it seems like it's shit, then it's probably like that on purpose, isn't it?
Yeah, it's meant to be shit.
It's shit on purpose.
Yeah.
Because it's chatting shit. So don't question it.
Just go with it.
Just go with it.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly, yeah. So this one's going to be different because it's our first one with a guest, isn't it? How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. And curious as to what it's going to be like.
I know, yeah. So,
it's not just any guest. It's an award-winning guest.
Oh, yeah, no, but let's save that. Let's save that. First of all, not only do you look slightly apprehensive about having a guest, you also look fucking freezing. What's going on out there?
Yeah. I'm in my garage.
Yeah, you're wearing a hoodie and a jumper and a woolly hat.
Yeah, it's freezing in here. My son's asleep, and you know the show must go on.
Yeah. It must therefore.
Life difficulties, as I say.
And plus, you've shaved your head, didn't you?
Yeah, I've grown dreadlocks. You know what they say? Never trust a white man with dreadlocks.
No, 100%. 100%.
So I'm doing it for social distancing purposes.
So you got the hoodie on, you got a woolly hat, puffer jacket, and you're ready to roll. Else is different about this episode?
We got a guest, mate.
Oh, you're joking. No, I'm just trying to, just rustling it up in my mind. Is this guest someone that's super talented?
Yes.
Funny?
Naturally.
Yeah. Bloody tall.
And good looking man.
Oh, God. So you're saying sort of model turned actor slash writer slash creator of the BAFTA award winning comedy series, This Country. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Are you saying this is straight out of Cirencester, Charlie Cooper?
Oh, yeah.
And he's here.
It's me. Hey. It's the real me.
Now we're fucking.
Yes, nice.
Welcome. Make sure you take your shoes off at the door. Because I've just got the cleaner in. And she costs 20 quid an hour. And time is money. And money is mine.
How's it going?
Your lockdown haircut just looks the same.
Do you know what? I've got a proper mullet growing at the moment.
Nice.
Well, a lot of fitness here. But
Yeah,
it's generally the same. I feel like it's the longest it's ever been, but maybe it's just feels like.
But maybe it just grows out the back.
Yeah.
Like a cycling helmet.
Yeah, it's like an alien shape. It's fucking weird.
Yeah. Great, man.
I rate that, man. I trimmed, so mine's just been going like that, yeah. And I just had a shave yesterday and sort of trimmed up my sideburns, so gave myself a little trim.
That's all right.
Yeah, I had a shaving accident and shaved it off.
That's all right, that's great. All my mates have been shaving their heads, so.
I wish I had a nice shaped head, man, but I've got a proper pea head, like most of my head is covered.
It's on display already.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, man. But thanks for I was going to say coming in. Thanks for sort of staying in your yard and having a chat with us, really.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for joining
us. Asking.
Yeah, nice one, man.
When did you start this, then? Is this...
Well, you're the first guest.
Am I?
Yeah. Sorry. We're sorry in advance.
Yeah, apologies. But if anything's shit, then it's shit on purpose. That's what we're going
with. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like underproduced.
Yeah, great. I'm not very eloquent, so.
That's perfect.
But neither are we at all.
Yeah, that's 100%. That's your best guest. That's great.
Right.
This part of the show is a section where, you people like to do it. I'd like to do it mainly at a dinner party or at the park. It's have a chat. Thank you.
This isn't a lockdown podcast. We already had this idea before, by the way. So it's not.
We're not capitalizing on sort of pandemics.
No.
Yeah.
But saying that, what have you been up to since you just... But you live on your own, bro?
Yeah, I do. But I've actually, just as lockdown was announced, I came to Norwich to stay at my girlfriend's mum.
Okay.
My girlfriend's here as well, obviously. That'd be a bit weird.
Yeah.
But no, it's been fine. It's been all right, to be honest. It's I'm keeping myself busy. It's sort of quite nice when you don't have the option, when your choices are limited, you can really sort of do the stuff that I normally neglect when I'm really busy.
Yeah.
That's quite nice. Been buying shit online, loads of shit online.
Yeah, like?
I bought a mug last night.
Nice.
I've already got about 15 mugs, but I've been buying so much that... when the postman comes in the morning, I've forgotten what I've ordered. So
yeah.
It feels like I'm getting a present every day.
I got a pizza oven through today.
Pizza oven?
Which is cool.
What, outdoor one or an indoor?
Yeah, outdoor, yeah.
The ordering stuff, man, like I've been doing so much of that myself, man.
It's keeping me going, to be honest.
Have you been cooking? Do you cook?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I've been doing as much as I can, really. Made pasta, which I was really proud about. But then I made some... ravioli, but it was so thick. It was like eating like whole pit of breads. I didn't cook it long enough, and it was awful. And I knew my girlfriend's mum was just sort of. I looked at her trying to chew it, and she, like, bless her, she ate the whole thing to not make me feel bad. But yeah, that was a disaster. But generally, yeah, I do love it. But again,
yes,
I wouldn't do as much, if I was busy and going out and working and stuff. So that's been really nice, but. Yeah, and doing chores, painting the fence. It feels like I've retired a little bit, like semi-retired.
Yeah.
Just pottering around in the kitchen.
Yeah. It's quite nice though, isn't it? I suppose, especially with like the industry that we're in, it's like, it's constant, like, usually it's like meetings and writing and emails. And it's like, although like it is a tough time and I'm not taking anything away from that, but like, it's nice for, like knock on wood, if everyone's healthy, everyone... If you're not in a bad way, then it's nice to be able to actually just like live life a little bit rather than just focusing on everything else sort of thing.
No, it puts things in perspective, and you find the joy in sort of the mundane activities. And I've tried to. I mean, I haven't been working much this last week. I sort of have been in the first 4 weeks.
Yeah.
I've just been procrastinating so much, but. Yeah, finding your little routines and stuff has helped.
Yeah.
No, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
it's all right. It's up and down. But
I liked it because things got cancelled.
Yeah.
I love the fact things got cancelled. Like, I normally have to go to, but I hate going to.
Because imagine how many meetings we go to where nothing really gets said and you've gone all the way into Central and you're like, what am I doing?
It's a lot of sort of dead air.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact definitely that, you know, stuff, you can do stuff from home now. You can fucking, you don't have to have a meeting fucking in London. You can just do it on the phone. Or,
yeah, you hang out in 10 minutes.
That's probably stuff that's going to change for a long time as people realising, you know.
Oh, 100%.
I'm probably jumping a bit, but have you been to America and had meetings there?
No, I haven't. But I imagine
they're amazing. They're like confidence building. Fucking, you think after that you are
gonna. Yeah, the first one we went to, we were like, brilliant. Fucking, what have we been fucking about in England for so long? This,
we this are is so it. Fucking important. It's mad.
And then, what, did anything come of it after?
Yeah. Nothing.
No, of course not. No.
Nothing.
This is a very useful part of the show. For when you need things to do, it's the recommendation part.
Where you've been sort of, I know you said you've been cooking and all that sort of stuff. Have you been, you got any recommendations of stuff you've been, I don't know, like watching, reading, listening to?
Yeah, I watch Unorthodox on Netflix.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant. Really good. It's only 4 episodes, but the script's brilliant and, yeah, really good acting. Yeah, it's about Hasidic Jews and New York, and it's fascinating, but really recommend that. What's Midsommar? Have you seen that, the film?
Yes.
Oh, amazing, man.
I didn't love it. I hated it, but it was really good.
Yeah.
Because like normally when we're writing, we're quite busy. That's the one thing I don't do is watch stuff, like especially script.
Yeah.
Because it always reminds me of work, and I just always want to get.
Yeah.
So I watch loads of documentaries, but at the moment I've been watching, I've been watching classic films that I've never seen before, like Goodfellas, I saw the other day.
So good.
Yeah.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest I hadn't seen.
I haven't seen that. There's a few classics I haven't seen. Yeah. I'm embarrassed about.
So I'm really embarrassed about. But so I've been ticking them off, which is really nice. But what else? So Get Out as well. That was a bit of a mind fuck.
Oh, yeah. That's really good.
But yeah, it's been great having that time just to get really like absorbed in stuff. And I'm going to start with Sopranos as well. I haven't seen that before.
Which one?
The Sopranos.
Oh man. Yeah. I've been bang on that, man. Do you know what? I started it maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
No spoilers, but like it's a known thing. He goes to see a therapist there because he has panic attacks. Yeah. And it was around the time where I started getting like panic attacks and anxiety. So I was like, every time I watched it, I was like, oh God, I can't actually watch this anymore. So I got up to like series 4, tortured myself.
Yeah.
And then recently on this lockdown, I'm like, I started again. I'm on series 6 now. It's amazing.
Yeah, I love it. But I found that I would think in my mind of dealing with a scenario like Tony Soprano, like smashing someone's face into a table 100 times.
It's something tiny. Yeah.
And then I was like, I have finished it. But I had to watch it slowly.
Do you get that in meetings when you think it's like you'll be chatting to someone, you think, what would happen now if I just slammed your head into the table?
Yeah.
100%. What would you do? Would you walk out or would you just laugh? But it's fucking tempting. But yeah.
And also, yes, if you did do that, I have this thought of like, if I did do that, would that be maybe the start of a new me that everyone listens to and maybe I could get away with it?
Yeah, but how can
I should have started it like that.
Yeah, build up a reputation like that. You've got just smashing people up, I suppose.
The thing with Sieber is he doesn't take any meeting seriously at all. So, like, the levels of fucking around. He does this thing, where he repeats what the person's just said.
Yeah.
I guess I get bored quickly and it's a way of making them interesting, isn't it? But smashing someone's head could be just as good. That's something I could maybe incorporate into it, definitely.
Yeah, it'd be dramatic.
What have you guys been watching?
So Sopranos, Tiger King as well. I know everyone's talking about it, but I only just got onto it. But have you seen it?
Yeah, so good, yeah.
Amazing, man.
Have you seen Capturing the Freedmans documentary?
No.
That's really good. That's really dark. But again, it was the same sort of thing where, I think it's on Netflix, but documentary maker was just like a real sort of low time guy. And he was doing a documentary about a guy who was at clown school or something. And then he was filming with him for a few weeks and then like discovered this sort of story about his family. And then the whole documentary ended up becoming about, I won't ruin it for you if you haven't seen it, but I recommend that, Capturing the Freedmans.
Yeah, yeah, I'll check that out, man.
I mean, it's really fucking dark by the end.
But yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's American, so it feels like you can only get those characters in America. It's just...
I know, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The Tiger King, that real, like, Trump voting, you know, gun shooting,
yeah,
like, proper yokels that, you know, it's just, it's scary. Like, they're all, you couldn't write those characters. If you did that, you'd be like, it's too much. They're too big.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, 100%. You'd be in a writer's room and they'd go, I don't know if I'd buy that.
Yeah.
Believable. Yeah.
Have you seen King of Kong?
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, that's fucking amazing.
That's amazing. But like similar in the sense of, you know, like you say, you know, it would only happen in America kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's this guy that basically tries to be the best at Donkey Kong. Oh. And then he has like an arch nemesis who has long black hair that runs his own hot sauce company. It's all real. It's yeah. Amazing, man.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. I watched that.
All right, cool. Well, let's get on to how you started. I mean, like, did you have like a vision or a dream to work in the creative industry? Like, I know you were a model before as well. How did it sort of come about?
A bad one. I never had any. I mean, I've always loved comedy, been really passionate about it, and you know, watched anything that was going, but never in my wildest dreams imagined I'd end up writing or acting. And it was sort of happened really naturally, to be honest. I went to uni initially and did sports science. Fuck knows why, but I absolutely hated it.
Personal trainer.
Yeah.
I looked like a noodle. I couldn't fucking... I came out of college and all my mates were going to uni. It was one of those where you don't know, at that age, you don't know what you want to do.
Yeah, of course.
I sort of panicked, really. I liked football and I was like, oh, maybe I'll do sports science and a job will come from that. And I was on a sports campus and like surrounded by hockey players and rugby players, just not my crowd. And they were like into drinking games and fucking just getting smashed. And so, I mean, I like getting smashed. And yeah, just hated it. And I was there for 2 years before I dropped out. And I remember my first night out in Freshers. Remember I got really pissed and got kicked out of the club for being sick in the urinal. And then I was walking home and got lost because it was like first day, so you don't know where you live. And I was so, so pissed. It's like, you know when you just can't, you can barely see, you can sort of see shapes. I remember like bumping into a group of like students who sort of were helping me get home. And all I remember hearing is one of the girls say, oh my God, look how much he's been sick down his shirt. And that sort of set the tone for the next 2 years. I just hated it. I just never really fit in, and I didn't really go to lectures that much. I got hooked on those roulette machines and the bookies at Ladbrokes.
Oh wow.
That's such a strange student story to become a gambler for a bit.
I had a mate that said that he could tell what number it was going to land on from the animation after you
really
have paid.
Everyone's done that. But what, did he get any money?
I don't know. I don't think so.
And I remember just ringing my sister and just like, you know, Daisy just saying, look, I hate it so much. And she said, look, she was studying drama at the time in London. And she said, come up and stay with me for the weekend in London and, you know, we'll talk about it and stuff. And so I did. And then I was meant to stay for the weekend and then ended up staying for a year and just never went back to uni.
Oh, wow.
I left all my stuff in my room. At uni and I went back for it, which is quite liberating.
Yeah, that's
it. All my clothes are there. So.
Still there.
Start my walk.
They're still there. Everyone moves in every year. They're like, that's Charlie Cooper's clothes. So leave that there. It's like a shrine.
Yeah.
Don't touch the shirt with the stick on it.
Yeah.
But, and then, just stayed there for a year. And we sort of shared this tiny little room. It was like, it was in the centre of London. And she was in her last year at drama school. And we've always been close growing up, but I think when we were teenagers, we sort of became a bit distant. You know, you go separate ways and stuff.
Yeah.
And then we sort of got really close again. And, you know, the one thing that we've always had in common was humour. And, you know, we always found the same things funny. And it was always the best way we communicated with each other.
Nice.
And then that was sort of the genesis of, like, this country, really. We talk about home, and because obviously we're from a tiny place in the Cotswolds, and we talk about characters we knew, friends we knew, and just to sort of stop us from being homesick. And we'd get Mum to send up the local paper, you know, the shitty sort of...
Oh, really? That's amazing. What, just for inspiration?
Just to read it and, you know, because it was like front page, it was like, you know, fucking cat gets stuck up tree or some shit like that.
Yeah, where I live, they have a local paper and it's amazing.
It's amazing. Don't realise how much you miss it until you're out of your...
How did you find it growing up there? Because, like, is it Cirencester?
Yeah,
is that what
it's
called?
Southwest England. It's about a few hours from London, about two and a half hour drive. So it's not too far, but it still feels like quite in the stick.
Yeah.
Not a lot happening.
Yeah, you're out of it.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, and it was one of those you sort of had to make your own entertainment. There was nothing going on.
Just like a stick with a ball on it.
But yeah, I used to go... Me and my mate used to go and find porno mags in the bottle bank. we found quite a lot. But it was, yeah, all the stuff that ended up being in this country, to be honest, was the stuff that we did.
So, right, okay, yeah.
You know, when it came to writing the show, it was so autobiographical, is that the word? So it was quite easy in that respect. But
yeah, because, of course, another famous thing I like to say in the writer's room is write about what you know, Charlie.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's a good one, isn't it?
It's clean.
Maybe a bit on the nose.
Yeah. How does fucking Steven Spielberg do it then? If it's right about what you know.
Yeah, fucking
alien friend.
Yeah. Because it's kind of like us as well. We never wanted to or never thought it was even a possibility to be an actor or anything like that. But I guess maybe subconsciously, because you're such a comedy fan sort of thing.
Yeah.
You said you were like watching a lot of comedies and stuff like growing up, like you and your sister, like what did you have like comedies you watched together that you had like in common and stuff that inspired you?
Oh yeah. I mean, The Office obviously was like the biggest.
Yeah.
And like for me, like the greatest comedy ever, I think.
Yeah. Same.
Alan Partridge.
100%.
Peep Show, Royal Family, Brass Up, Day to Day, like everything. And
that's sick.
Because when we were in London, we didn't have computers at the time, so we just had this like tiny little DVD player that you just put CDs in, and we just watched stuff on there. We'd go to HMV, you know, we didn't have much money, but we'd buy, you know, some sort of shitty B movie or a comedy and take it home and watch it. And this was sort of before we knew we were going to write anything. That's all we did. We sort of became obsessed with it. And then it wasn't until Daisy finished drama school and we both moved home, back in with our parents, which was sort of a bit of a shock, you know, having a few years in and having to move back. And then Daisy wasn't getting any work, any drama work. And our dad was like, look, why don't you write something that she can be in? Just make most of the time that you're not doing anything. And I literally wasn't doing anything. I was doing sort of part-time at Argos.
Yeah.
and stuff like that. And so it was, it happened really naturally. And then we just started writing sort of a handful of characters that sort of we really, really made us laugh, sort of based on people we knew in town and went to school with. And then, it went from there, really. We sort of wrote a little script and sent it off to production companies.
Sorry to interrupt, just to skip back. Yeah. Like, how did you even know how to write a script? How was that even a possibility? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, we just started. I think that's the best way to do it. We didn't research or ask much advice. We literally just, like, the only characters we had then was Carrie's mum and a character called Dale, which ended up sort of being Curtin. So we'd improvise a lot of stuff. And obviously Daisy would do the voice for the mum. So we just record that on a little tape recorder. And just film our own little scenes, really, and put them on YouTube. Not that anyone was watching, but it was sort of a good way of, like, finding those characters, I suppose. And when we started, we were shit. Like, we weren't funny. There was a glimmer of something, but, like, you know, it took us so long to get it right and to, you know, it's something that you've got to keep doing to get better at. But, we literally did, like, a 10-page script or something like that and submitted it along with a few videos to production companies and got a little bit of interest. And then we went for meetings in London, which was like a huge thing for us, like getting a National Express. And
yeah,
and it was those meetings, you know, it's like something out of a movie. going in, these big fucking producers and their like offices and that. It's fucking nuts. And then, we started developing the idea for a show for quite a while with one company that was sort of a branch of like a bigger company, a big American production company. And up until the point we got a pilot commissioned by ITV, amazing. And, but then things started to go wrong before then, really, because we were developing the show, but we sort of compromised on loads of stuff, and the producers, I don't think, ever really got what we wanted, and stuff like they always wanted the mum to be seen, and they didn't think it would ever work, you know, just as a voice, which is mental about it now, but and stuff like that. So yeah, we compromised on loads of stuff, and the show became, it was a bit like, have you seen in Extras with Andy Millman? When he does his
own
catchphrase,
and that's heartbreaking, isn't it? Like when you've been working on something for so long, and you know, by the sound of it, your vision is so clear because you're into a specific type of comedy. So you know, it's like you want it to be like this, and then having it sort of taken out your hands a bit can be heartbreaking. And do you think not to send shots, but like I guess ITV is a different kind of channel, you know? So like,
yeah, it wasn't the right home for it, but I think
we
the thing is, and that was sort of engineered by the producer at the time who wanted us to go with ITV.
Are you mates with him now?
No, absolutely not.
No, he's a complete dickhead. And do you know what, Charlie? If I see him, I'm going to smash his head on a table for you,
mate. That'd be fucking brilliant. Right. Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Let me know when you've done it, sir.
I'll film it.
Dressed as Tony Soprano.
Yeah. Just so people know it's a joke.
Yeah.
Like a velour feeler tracksuit.
Yeah, exactly. But no, sorry, man. So like, so when that happened, like it kind of felt like it got taken out of your hand.
And you put so much trust in these people that, you know, you've been in the industry for ages and you think they know better than you do. And so we sort of, we went along with it and, you know, stuff got taken out. Like me and Daisy love being really specific with jokes, and like some of the references we do are always quite obscure, and you know they would always say, "Oh, no one's going to get it." And it ended up becoming a really broad comedy. The pilot was so bad, I can't even describe it. It was like the first note was like Kerry and Curtin are too unlikable. You can't have them, you know, swearing. You can't have them nicking something from the shop because no one's.
Oh man, fucking hell!
It was those flaws that make them likable in the end.
Of course, yeah.
They became like characters out of fucking Glee or something like that.
Yeah,
Glee.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so bad, and and then it got dropped by ITV, and it wasn't any fault of ITV, and it was just heartbreaking for us. And then, eventually, production company dropped us, which is sort of a good thing, I suppose.
When you say good thing, it was a good thing in the long run. But how did you feel at the time? Did you feel kind of like lost, or did you feel like a weight had been lifted off your shoulders, sort of thing?
A bit of both, I think. We went through every emotion. I think initially we were quite shocked, and it was sort of everything had been gearing up to that point, and we were so hopeful for a series to get commissioned after that pilot. And then when we got the news, it was just, it was like, you know, fucking shell shocked.
Yeah.
And the production, when the production company dropped us, you know, we sort of, we were on our own. Daisy had an agent, but he was a bit useless and sort of forgot who she was. And so we were really on our own at that point. So it was really, when we started again, basically, we just sort of, we threw out a lot. We sort of made a pact to ourselves that we wouldn't find ourselves in the same situation and we wouldn't compromise next time. So I think we had known that Shane Allen at BBC, he's like head of comedy.
Yeah.
He'd seen our stuff before and liked it. So we managed to get hold of his email and just emailed him just like in sort of desperation saying, is there any chance we can come in for a meeting? We've been fucked over, or at least we feel like we've been fucked over.
But that's amazing.
Like, we feel like we've got something. And Daisy in the email put, I'll dress as a karate kid and stand outside your office every day until you agree to come meet us. And he replied, what? Don't do that. It's coming for a meeting.
That's amazing. Fucking hell.
Which is, brilliant.
Do you know what? I love hearing stories like that. Yeah. Using comedy as a way to sort of penetrate your way in is amazing, man. Yeah. That's sick.
Yeah, no, because I remember saying, I was like, don't do that, don't put that. She was like, no.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and we went for a meeting, and then we talked about what we wanted to do, what had happened, and, you know, the mistakes we made. And then he just commissioned the series sort of on the spot, really. And we're like, what?
Wow.
You sure you don't want to do a pilot? He's like, no, you've done a pilot. You've learned from that. And
wow.
That was amazing. And he, like, credit to Shane Allen, he is quite sort of old school in that way, that if he finds talent, he'll back it. If he likes you.
Yeah.
And that was always amazing. Yeah. And he always supported us. And without him, fuck knows where we'd be. So, yeah, credit to him.
Oh, that's sick, man. He's a G.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. Right about now, you are locked into the legendary Chat and Shit podcast, lad. With Alan Seep and Mustafa. Hugo Chegwin. And a nice little special guest there. So kick back. Tune in. And listen, you might hear something you like.
So you lot won the BAFTA.
Yeah.
It was best series. Was it 2018?
Yes. Yeah.
Best scripted comedy.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Congratulations, and complete well deserved as well. Fucking amazing series.
Yeah.
And you guys got the writers one as well, right?
Yeah, the writers one. Yeah, last year. Yeah, so.
Yeah, sick. Amazing. But I remember the reason I bring it up is because I remember you guys shouting out Shane on your speeches. Every time. And that makes a lot of sense because, like, it's one thing like having a production company do it for you and kind of never meeting those people and feeling like, okay, it's nice that they commissioned it, but you weren't actually there. Whereas, like, you guys had that direct connection. So I guess it means a lot that that person, like, took a chance on you guys, really, didn't it?
100%. Yeah, and it's difficult. When you're a production company, they're sort of the middleman. It was a situation where that company itself wasn't doing very well, so they were trying to get anything commissioned. And to be fair, they were just trying, you know, to change the show and what they thought would be an easy, you know, series commission.
Cash cow.
Yeah, that meat grinder type comedy sort of thing, going in and out of that.
And because they had like it was owned by an American company, so all the scripts had to be signed off by like American execs that we'd never met. And they didn't know the Cotswolds or anything like that.
Yeah. Where the fuck's Cotswolds? Like
when we did the pilot, it got sent to the Americans and they watched it, and one of their notes came back and it was, the cast are too ugly.
Fucking hell.
We need some hot guys.
This was before I was in it. My sister was the lead. And I was, to be fair, pretty accurate, to be honest.
And then that's why they put a model in it.
Yeah, get the big guns out.
To balance it out.
Right.
Yeah.
When you done your pilot, like, I felt when we done ours, I was actually really scared because, like, even just a guy putting his hand up my top, putting the mic in, like surrounded by people.
Yeah, because ours went from like doing stuff on YouTube with just literally the five of us to suddenly minimum 30 people around you at any time sort of thing.
Getting the sides as well.
Yeah, sides. Yeah. I didn't know what sides were.
I was like, have you got the mini script thing?
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, what? I remember me and you had to do a walking scene and they were like, okay, guys, just wait there. And they were like, rolling. And then we just went into the scene. They were like, no, go on action.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
All right.
We were so out of our depth. And like, even Daisy, who went to drama school, she was like, they don't even teach you these things. Like the practicalities of being in something or even like being in an audition, like what had the process, what happens. And so both of us were sort of, totally out of our depth. So you did a pilot as well, and then
we did a pilot that we all hated.
Yeah,
yeah, same as you. Like, I mean, it wasn't not in the sense like it's no one's fault either with our one. It wasn't so much like taken out of our hands. It was more that like I guess we were just really learning. We did. I remember it being. I think it was like 14 drafts for the script. You know, like there's so many people involved, and like you said, you don't know who to listen to and who to. Where to pick your battles and
they would suggest things on the day the director of the pilot and like now I would be like nah, he wouldn't do that and that's wrong but at the time I was just like yeah whatever you want
like, you sort of learn don't you and also I think the director that we had like so basically what the difference was we got a new director for the series so that's how we kind of all changed and we sort of created this new bond with our director who's like now our like our part of family but before it was just someone that we sort of hardly knew didn't have much time before it we'd done nothing obviously and he was maybe a little bit set in his ways because he's a bit older as well and I think he was imagining it to be look more like a sort of you know how Made in Chelsea is more of a fake documentary rather than a classic, like The Office style sort of thing. So when we saw the edit, it looked like a fucking advert. It was like everything was so fast and like there's no time to breathe. And like, I think even to this day, like I wish it could be slower as well. But I think because there's five leads in our one, it's hard to like, you've got to cram everyone's story in, man. And that's what's so brilliant about this country is that it focuses mainly on you two guys and you've got so much more room to breathe. And I love the way it's shot as well. It's like you've got so many nice dirty shots that make it look like more like, and candid shots that make it look more like
character-driven.
More character-driven,
Yeah, it was weird because we didn't intend it to be a mockumentary. We wanted it to be like a mockumentary and feel like real and have lots of improv and, you know, talking over each other and stuff like that. But then it was our producer, Simon, when we went to the BBC, he was like, it's got to be a mockumentary. It's got to... And that's when the idea that we would package it as like a sort of hard-hitting BBC documentary about sort of youth in, you know, countryside. Like a serious documentary getting undercut by fucking, you know, Kerry and Curtin was just sort of so easy. It felt so simple and so easy. And I think that's the mistake we had made before was always trying to make it too complicated. And again, the pilot was, the whole storyline of that was that Kerry had a love interest and it was a bit weird. But thinking about it now, it was just totally wrong. And it's just totally got in the way of all the comedy.
It's funny though, isn't it? The things you look back at that they're actually at the time because everyone's overthinking it so much. It becomes like a mental story. When actually, especially with stuff like this, man, and you know, tribute to The Office as well. I think what we both do is a massive tribute to The Office, isn't it? Like without that comedy and sort of style-wise, we wouldn't be doing what we're doing. But like all of that sort of stuff, it's just simple storylines and it's more about the characters, you know?
Totally. And it's real life. It's like, you know, the fact real life is not a lot happens. You know, you might be obsessed with finding what what happened to an old schoolmate in year seven who you haven't seen.
Yeah, I love that episode.
Just like,
but
it's
yeah,
like, all the stuff we that we did.
Salamander.
Sometimes I like to put a kettle on, and once I hear that click, I pour it out into a cup and I sit down, and all I want to do is chat.
You guys, obviously, you work with your sister,
yeah,
Daisy Cooper, amazing, super talented, and your dad's in there as well as her.
Yeah. Martin
Mutters.
he's a horrible bastard.
He is. No, but like so, and I heard there was other people that you're friends with or have in there.
Yeah, loads basically. Len, sort of vagrant. He's our uncle, but he's been a jobbing actor for like years.
Oh, okay.
Like a professional of the family. And then our dad plays Martin Mucklow, who's Harry's dad. And then we had a mate, Michael Sleggs, who played Slugs. He was a mate from school who was like a couple years above, who was always a bit weird. And we wrote the character about him. And then when it came to casting, we were casting loads of different people and it just didn't feel right. And then it just got to the point of like, okay, let's see if he can do it. Like the actual guy who it's based on.
Yeah.
And we got him in for a casting. He was brilliant. He was so natural. And there were a lot of, I mean, my dad hadn't had acting experience either. But I think doing a mockumentary is such a good format for comedy because you can just, as long as you're real and truthful and don't try and play for laughs too much, you can sort of get away with it. And like my dad could do the accent. It was like little things like that, you know, made the world feel just authentic and like a place that does exist.
So your dad never, did your dad... he hadn't worked as an actor or in the industry or anything like that?
No, like, he's always been a massive show-off, but he's never acted. He is the biggest David Brent you'll ever meet, like a genuine David Brent.
Amazing.
He used to be the manager of our football team when we were kids. Yeah. And he used to be, in like the 70s and 80s, he was like in a real shit local band that he always goes on about.
Yeah.
And he claims that this record company approached him and... it was down. They were going to sign one more band for that quote for that year, and it was between his band and then a band called Iron Maiden. guess which one they signed. And when he was manager of our football team, I was about six. He wrote. It was so bad. It was so David Brent. He wrote this charity song about football, about playing football.
Yeah.
And it was like on local news and stuff.
Sick.
And like he's always had like a series of really shitty jobs. Like he's been like mostly in sales, and he's never been good at it, and never earned that much money.
Yeah.
And so he's always been a performer in the back of his head somewhere.
Yeah.
And well, basically he's a massive narcissist. But he was great, and he, again, so natural, and again, that was a character that we didn't plan on showing that much, and then as we were writing the series became just a bigger thing because it was like, well, what does Kerry really want? All she wants is, you know, to be the affection from her dad, and it was just as simple as that. And it was, which was quite sort of an accident, I suppose. And then Michael Sleggs, who unfortunately passed away last summer just before we did the third series, and he'd had sort of health problems for years, and was quite severely ill when he was younger, but managed to pull through. And again, when we were writing that character, we sort of made it as truthful as we could to him, really. And I think we're all, like, all the actors in this country, we're not far from the characters we play. Yes. And I think that is, you know, the vicar is fucking just as nice as a vicar, if not nicer. Mandy is just as, well, actually, both Mandy is fucking more terrifying than Mandy.
Do you guys, like, with People Just Do Nothing, we're super specific about, like, all the fine details, which I can see you guys are, but, like, the clothing and stuff, do you guys pick what they wear and things like that?
Yeah, totally. And I think, I mean, because most of the characters were based on sort of people we knew from town.
Mm.
So...
yeah.
Already you knew what they dressed like, and when it came to clothing the characters, it was like, well, Kerry's always going to be in a football shirt because that's what the real Kerry was always wearing. Yeah. So again, it was quite straightforward, and Curtin was just, you know,
I love Curtin's clothes.
Oh, it was like
super dry jacket.
So
like Osiris type skate shoes type shoes.
Yeah, I love that.
So chunky. Yeah. Everything I used to wear as well. Yeah. No fear.
Yeah, that's the same with us as well.
But again, like, for the first series, it just basically went all around all the charity shops and sciences, nice. And just there was a wealth of no fear, man. Just in every shop.
Amazing.
And because there's one sort of men's clothing shop in our town called Burton's, yeah. Which is obviously shit, like we're in the middle of the road. And there's one nightclub. So, you know, when we used to go to the nightclub, all the lads would be in the same Burton shirt that you could get from that shop. It was so bad. But
is it like a sort of Burton shirt, bootcut jeans and a super dry jacket?
100%. Yeah.
Super dry is massive.
Oh, mate, yeah.
Where I live, it's huge.
But again, it's in every charity shop. You'll find like 10 fucking super dry jackets, or it's just insane.
Did it become, like, with People See Nothing, it was really, like, slow build-up and it wasn't, like, an overnight success. How was it with this country? Did you feel, like, a massive impact the first time it went out, like, the actual series on BBC?
Not really, yeah. It came out, I mean, it wasn't that long after BBC Three had gone online, so it felt like not a lot of people had watched it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I remember the first night it came out, me and Daisy sat in a room just typing hashtag this country into Twitter and like nothing coming up, or like one person tweeting going, this looks shit, this country. But that's the great thing about social media. It's, well, a good and bad thing is you get that instant feedback.
Yeah.
And if you're brave enough, you can look up, you know, whatever anyone's ever written about you. Which to begin with was like, it was mixed but we were really proud of what we had, and I think that was the comfort, really.
Yeah.
It was a slow burn. I think it took people a while to come onto it, and I think we had to rely a lot on just word of mouth, really.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't any money in the budget to advertise it. But I think it only really feels it stepped up a level after Series 3, really.
Yeah.
But it had like a strong cult following.
Yeah, that's the thing, and I remember it being. Just like it was massive in the industry, like anyone that knew what they were talking about loved it. So, do you know what I mean? And then and of course all these things are going to be so. And it's not the fucking Andy Millman fucking Mrs. Brown's Boys BBC One show. Do you know what I mean? So it's like you almost. I mean, I know with us as well. It's not about everyone seeing it and everyone loving it. It's about being proud of it, but also wanting those people to see something that you worked so hard on as well.
Yeah.
Wanting to give it a good platform for people to see basically. Yeah.
The biggest thing for me was just if my mates liked it. If they didn't like it, I'd have been like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's a good point, man.
And luckily they did, and it was all right. But
they're the same you don't really talk to anymore because you've made it now, so fuck them, innit?
Yeah, exactly.
You're way better.
Now you're getting them. Yeah.
I needed you guys back then, but I definitely don't.
Definitely don't now. Not in my girlfriend's mum's in Norwich. it's good. I mean, it's been like over the last few years, it's been just fuck it. Even going to the BAFTAs and that first when we met you guys, and it was just like, you know, because we fucking idolized you and seeing you there. I was so fucking intimidated seeing you.
No, man.
Yeah, you're in a place
full
of people you've like grown up watching on TV.
Yeah.
Genuinely starstruck. It's like, fucking hell, this is nuts.
Yeah.
And then people come up to you, you know. Saying, oh, I love the show, fucking Ant and Dec, people like that.
We had Cuba Gooding Jr. and Phil Mitchell behind us.
I thought he was a fan of the show, because he didn't know, was it?
God, they have no idea we are.
God, no. But yes, like, I remember seeing David Mitchell and just being like, fuck, Mark from Pete Show, this is mental.
I feel like we're not meant to be there.
Totally. That's how I felt. We both felt like imposters, like we was all like, we'd won a competition.
Yeah.
But then I was speaking to someone who was like, don't worry, everyone in this building will be feeling the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, Ant and Dec would be feeling that, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's absolute bollocks, mate. Thank you.
You won yours. Was that the first BAFTA you went to?
We got nominated one year.
I think it was
2016 we got nominated and didn't get anything. And 2017... is when we won for best scripted, and then we went when we saw you Atom was nominated, so we were just there as like with him as support kind of
thing. Yeah.
But we felt exactly the same. And actually, because we didn't win anything the first time we went, it was like we really felt like we didn't belong. Do you know what I mean? Like we were, yeah. And we didn't win, and we were like, oh man, it's feel a bit like a bit of a dickhead, sort of like I don't know if my suit fits me properly, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. But, so weird.
Baggy suit.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the best year we had was the year we met you, because there was no pressure. We weren't up for anything, which obviously is, I'm not saying that's a good thing. Like we would have loved to, but you know, like at that point, it was just more about having a bit of fun, sort of thing, and supporting kind of thing. Yeah.
And what did you, when you won? What did you go fucking nuts?
Oh man, it was fucking insane. Yeah, I remember we just Ash was meant to do the speech, and we were like, what we want to do? You know what I mean? Like we started on our own on YouTube, so like we're going to do. He's like, all right, so. We sort of ran straight onto stage, and I didn't know what I was going to say, man. I know people say this, like, I didn't know what I was going to say. But honestly, I thought, like, I can improv anyway in real life, so, yeah, no, I'll just grab the mic and say something witty, probably. And I was just like, thanks. Kept fucking stuttering, and I was like, because we started this on YouTube, and now we're here. And then I looked at the boys, I was like, does any of you want to... And then and they're just like, nah. And then Ash comes over, man, and grabs the mic, man. Yeah, it was pathetic. It's on YouTube, man. I can't even watch it, but yeah.
I just went pure corruption at the end, and the mic got cut off. So I went, yeah. Great.
Wow, DJ Ostrich, why you stop the show? Well, I'll tell you, bro, this is the most important part. It's the question everybody wants to know. No, it is not what is your favorite jean fit. No, it is not what is your favorite size inch television. It's what is your favorite sandwich? Is it chicken? Is it salami? Is it cheese? Is it ham? Is it pickle? Is it jam? These are all questions I'm sure you are thinking. But right now you're gonna find out on the Chat and Shit podcast. Yeah, baby, come on.
Charlie, we've come to the end of your journey.
Wow.
I'm doing all right. I sound like I'm doing a proper interview, innit? And I feel like we've covered everything, but we've always got a question that we have to ask all our guests. What's your favourite sandwich?
Beef.
Oh no! Yeah, fried beef sandwich.
Nice, no butter, nothing.
Mike, is this like a first thing in your head thing?
Oh no, no!
Can I think?
No, it doesn't need to be. But let's leave it at that though. Beef sandwiches is amazing.
No, it's still my favourite.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think that your local newspaper—that's going to be a headline. Charlie Cooper loves a beef sandwich.
Dry,
yeah. If it's not a dry beef sandwich, what would it be?
Jesus.
You can go like bread, everything. You know, you can talk me through it.
You can finesse.
Chicken salad, tomato sandwich.
Nice.
You know, a bit of mayo, a bit of pepper.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
A bit of Caesar salad dressing as well.
Nice.
Nice.
And Charlie, you'll be shocked to know that was in my top three sandwiches. It's number three. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
We've got so much in common.
Yeah. All right, sweet. And for the last part of the show, it's a segment we'd like to call The Guest Asks Us Three Questions.
The Three Questions.
Three questions.
Do I have to ask different questions for each year?
If it tailors both of us, then you can just do three. And if it's, do you know what I mean?
Okay. First question.
Yeah.
This is for both of you. What's the worst thing you've ever done?
Ooh.
And be honest.
Ooh, fucking hell. All right. Man. Mine's quite dark.
Is it? How dark is it?
That dark. Probably for me, the worst thing I've ever done. Stealing money off my parents to feed my skunk addiction when I was a teenager.
Oh, that is dark.
Everyone done that.
And everyone does that, it's true. But for me, it's probably the worst thing I've done. Go on, Hugo.
Mine was, I found when I was younger a mobile phone in the park, and I bit the SIM. I thought if I bit the SIM card, then the SIM card wouldn't work. And then I could take it home and keep the phone.
Why
and then
bite it?
Because my mate Ashley was like, you've got to basically break the SIM card, but you can't take it out because otherwise the phone would be blocked.
So you just use your face.
I bit it, yeah. And I kept the phone and I feel really bad about it.
Yeah.
What would you be doing if you weren't doing this?
That's good.
I'm not talking about the podcast, but
yeah.
Stealing money from your parents.
Still, yeah.
Even if my mum's stealing off her smoking loads of weed. No, I'm joking. I love you, mum, and I'm sorry for that. And she already knows. I guess I'd be. Is it cheating to say that I'd be a musician?
No.
I'd be a musician of some kind, maybe. Maybe I can't say rapping because it's too similar to what I do, but I'd be a drummer. I used to play the drums when I was a kid. Go on, here you go.
I don't know. I'd like to say that I'd be doing music, but I'd probably be in a call centre, I reckon.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
That's the only thing we did do, apart from this shit, was work in call centres, to be fair, so...
Last question, sort of on that line. What's the worst job you ever had?
Go on, you Hugo, you start, actually. I can't think.
I had a job interview at a will writing company, and in the interview, I basically lied. They were like, "Are you good with numbers?" And I went, as a joke, "Have you seen Rain Man?" And then the guy went, he went, "Great." And then I got employed as an accountant for a will writing company, and I can't really do anything.
Well, like the age of 19 or that.
Yeah, and then the guy in charge went on holiday the day after I started, so I was in charge of all the accounts.
You're an accountant at 19.
That's depressing, though.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Horrible. I got sacked.
Mine was I worked at Chesham World Adventures for a season. And I just picked the wrong fucking department. You know, everyone else, all like the cool people were like on the rides and like chatting to chicks and stuff like that. And I was at the fish and chip shop. The pirate themed fish and chip shop.
That is amazing.
And I just stunk of fucking fish and chips. And you weren't even allowed to take any food. And I remember like, it's like scratching chicken nuggets up my sleeve and going into the back room just to eat one and stuff. And that's the highlight of my day, I think. But yeah, on that note, last question. Charlie Cooper, are you our new best mate?
100, I thought we already were.
Perfect. And that's what we're here. Charlie Cooper.
No, I loved it. Thanks for having me.
Hey!
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
Oh, that was an absolute bloodbath.
Love.
Yeah, man. No, he was a proper cool guy, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, very, he's super safe, man.
Yeah, man. No, it's good to have Charlie on. I think you've done really well as well, Hugo.
Thank you. And you?
He liked you. Yeah. Do you think he liked
me? I think so, yeah. I hope so. Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to stick him on the best friend list, if you are.
Definitely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, big up, Charlie, for coming on. If you haven't seen it already, well, even if you have, it's layered. Watch it again. This Country is now on the iPlayer. I think the whole thing's on there. And I'd say it's the best comedy to come out of the UK in about the last 10 years. Would you agree?
Yeah.
100%.
Maybe start a WhatsApp chat with me, you and Charlie, just to carry it on. I felt like...
He's our best mate now. So
I felt like I had more to give him.
Maybe. Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I felt that as well. So, yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'm on that.
All right, man.
All right, see you later, man.
See you in a bit.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.